Evening, boys and girls, and welcome to another edition of the Trinity Tims. I'm joining you from sunny West Kerry, or, you know, the west of Ireland is looking good this evening. It's 27 degrees here, so I said I'd do the podcast outside as the house was a bit like a furnace. So I'm joined as usual by my colleagues from Video Celts, Joe McHugh, and James Forrest, obviously, of the Celtic blog. And as you all know, I'm Eric Knott of Read Celtic. So we've got quite a packed agenda, quite a fair bit to talk about. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Aberdeen game. We're going to talk about the comedy show at Ibrox, which could have been even more comedic if the referees hadn't messed it up for everybody. And then we'll talk about our Lord and Master, Dermot Desmond. And after that, we'll probably talk some more about our Lord and Master, Dermot Desmond, and the Celtic board and things like that. And then we will have a look at next weekend and post some predictions of what we think is going to happen. So, first of all, we'll start with yesterday's game. For me, I guess the result was a good result, 2-0 win in what we expected to be a tough fixture. I thought Aberdeen were rank rotten. I don't know about you guys. They had one shot on target in the whole game. I think that pretty much speaks for itself. The referee was rank rotten, which we would have expected anyway. And our front line was not great. I won't say rank rotten, but not great. And we had to rely on midfield to get our goals. To be fair, which were very good. Fantastic run from Kieran Tierney and ball across for Benjamin Negrin to slot in, and then a bit of the spectacular from Rio Hatate, which, you know, was a fantastic goal. Even when you look at it from the angle over to the side a bit, the way he put it into the top right corner was beautiful, and went on off the underside of the crossbar. But a good result. Once again, lets our board off the hook because of events elsewhere the previous day. So I'll go over to Joe and I'll ask Joe what his opinion was of yesterday's performance and what he thought of all the happenings up at Pittodrie.
It was a good performance. You can only beat what's in front of you. Celtic never gave Aberdeen much of a sniff. A few little bursts here and there, but there's nothing concentrated from Aberdeen. Celtic are in a pretty good condition. They've got 11 starters on the pitch that will win matches, and there's a couple of substitutes there. We know that there is badly lacking options from the wing, and Adam Ida isn't going through the best of form, but there's other players not going through the best of form. I don't think Carter Vickers or Alistair Johnson were particularly fantastic yesterday. A wee bit rusty. Liam Scales misplaced a pass at the start of the second half, midway through the second half. A lot of people jumped on that, but Scales was doing fine. Most of them are doing fine. The team's getting a way to play. The Gren's been integrated in, which is good, but also frustrating because you can actually sign players and have them in the building for pre-season training. After his international duty with Sweden, McGren has been taking part in every day of pre-season training at Celtic. He missed the Queen's Park game, he missed the Cork game, but so did the other international players. And then when he went to Portugal, he was involved in those games. His quietest game so far was St Mirren at home, but that's a guy that was identified, signed, deal-sorted. It's not too difficult. It can be done with other players, but for reasons unknown, it doesn't happen at Celtic. We don't know if what the process is. Is Brendan Rodgers involved? How much is he involved? Are the club unable to identify players? Are they identifying players and unable to get a deal with them? Or are players being presented to Brendan Rodgers and he's knocking them back? So we're all just left in the outside guessing at it. Who knows what's going on? It appears as if there is one almighty standoff between Brendan Rodgers and the board. Positions are getting more entrenched. Brendan Rodgers he's lost his tie, a bit like yourself tonight, Eric. He's lost his belt. He's still very much in control of that team. He knows the drill. He knows what's required in the SPFL to succeed. He's getting on with his job the best he can, but it's far from ideal circumstances. But for those 90 plus minutes on the park, the team looks as if they're starting to function. They are still a million miles away from being close to what we would want for a Champions League qualifier, which is 9 days away. That's not going to change. But Rodgers, when he's asked about transfers, he's got a comfort blanket, working with the players to get them the best possible place. I'd be amazed if there's any business done, any worthwhile business done before the European deadline. So the squad that was involved at Aberdeen yesterday, they'll be involved next Wednesday in the Champions League qualifier. And the best you can do is cross our fingers and hope that Brendan Rodgers pulls it off, gets us through. But that squad is thin at the minute. That squad going into the Champions League will not do anywhere near as well as last season. And there could well be a significant knock-on impact on the domestic form. So great, a good win at Aberdeen, 2-0. One well-worked goal, one spectacular goal, but we all know the bigger picture, and I'll pass the bigger picture over to James.
Well, I just want to talk about the game. I'm not going to worry about the bigger picture because I'm resigned to the bigger picture being what it is. Rodgers will go at the end of the season. We will dither about the transfer market for the rest of this window. Then again in January, Rodgers will go at the end of the season and the board will get to run things the way they want to run it. And the way evidently that a lot of your fans want to see it run as well. So, bigger picture. I mean, it's like I'm resigned to it at this point. What I will say is that as long as Rodgers is here, we'll continue to get results. And that was it wasn't a great performance yesterday, but it was a better performance than the week before. And whatever Rodgers has to work with, he will find a way to do it. He always does. But when he does find a way to do it, I don't want to hear any bollocks about how the board backed him or the board supported him or anything like that, because it's perfectly obvious that they're not going to back him. It's perfectly clear that Rodgers is just going to have to soldier on. But the thing about that is that Rodgers is good enough to soldier on. Rodgers is good enough to make it, no matter what crap tools he's gave to work with. Rodgers will find a way to turn the new signings into good players, or at least players that will do a functional job for us, and we'll have enough to get over the line. And part of that, of course, as we'll discuss later on, is that we're up against an absolute shambles. I like the look of Nygren. Nygren's obviously a good player. He's obviously the best piece of business we've done in this window, with the exception of Kieran. But I mean, 7 signings and 2 of them look like they're the kind of caliber that we were looking for. And one cost £2 million and the other one was free. And the only reason we got Kieran was because we've got a long relationship with Kieran, and Kieran's got a long relationship with the club. Nygren is excellent business. So kudos to whoever uncovered him. But the rest of it is just meh. Meh. That's what you expect. £3 million spent, £25 million sitting in the bank due to the Coon fee, the Frimpong sell-on, and other wee bits of business that we've done. And they have no intention of spending any more than they need to. So it's got to be a lot of days like Sunday, a lot of potential banana skins that Rodgers will overcome, and that the team will overcome. They're acting with the utmost professionalism. I don't know what other people at the club think they're doing.
Yeah, no, I'd have to agree with that, James. we did get a glimpse of Shin Yamadi yesterday. And apart from one run, I think there wasn't much else really, was there? But again, look, that was his first run out for the team. So obviously, in such a short space of time, you're probably not going to get to see much of what he can or can't do. But I think overall, you're right in what you're saying with regards to Rodgers. Rodgers definitely is the man who's able to get the results that are required in what we'd consider banana skin type fixtures, which would be definitely a trip to Pittodrie. That's definitely a tough fixture. And, you know, I kind of said last week that we'll grind out results. It'll be 1-0, 2-0, those kind of results. But I can't see free-flowing, high-scoring games this season unless we get the forward options in that we require. And we're all very sceptical as to whether that's going to happen or not. But one point that we have to discuss in relation to the game yesterday was the performance of our favourite referee, John Beaton. And, I mean, how he missed that handball is completely beyond me. Joe, what's your opinion on that whole fiasco?
I was going to say, what handball? Because there were two there's the one that Aberdeen broke away from when the ball, Negren was trying to pass the ball. Aberdeen player just happened to raise his arm, block the ball, change its direction and set up an attack for his side. But just before that, there was one where Shinney fell over on the goal line, went into a sort of crouch position and kept the ball in play using both arms. I saw, if you're on Twitter at all, get on with Lint, L-I-N-T. That guy scrutinises things. If I was Celtic chief executive tomorrow, which will not happen in a million years, Lint would be my first appointment. I would get him on board. I don't know if he'd be head of media, but every single game, I'd get him highlighting some little inconsistencies. But there was a handball with Shinney. He fell over on the ball under pressure from Tierney and Maeda. Used his arms to stop the ball going any further, and Beaton just bottled out of it. But the handball in the centre circle was incredible. You saw it clearly. But there was about 7-8 seconds, maybe 10 seconds of play afterwards where he could have blown his whistle and realised that this could get very serious, this could look very messy. Fortunately, Kasper Schmeichel pulled off a fantastic save. But as I saw someone point out on Twitter, Schmeichel's save meant the ball went out for a corner. If Aberdeen had scored from the corner, they'd have still benefited from that handball. I think that Beaton did, as most referees do, two wrongs make a right. When that corner came in, it was overhit, and he blew for some non-existent free kick to Celtic to get himself out of jail. But it sums him up. It sums up refereeing. It sums up Celtic that there's no comment about it. I mean, it's outrageous. If Beaton was left out of matches this weekend, he'd be £1,000 down. And the next time he's doing a Celtic match, when he's deciding to level up, he might think twice about it. But we know that Willie Collins, a good friend of John Beaton, they're both good friends of Andrew Dallas and Hugh Dallas. They're both members of the Lanarkshire Refereeing Association. So what happened yesterday was entirely predictable. No fuss, barely a mention in the mainstream media, and of course, absolute silence from Celtic. Was it December 20 at Ibrox, the incredible John Beaton show, Morelos kicking lumps and gnawing at body parts of Celtic players all over the place, nothing said or done. Celtic were shamed into a statement, the old favourite, surprised and disappointed. Peter Lille went to Hampden, had a meeting with Ian Maxwell, was reminded of some paperwork from 2012, and nothing further was said about it, and Beaton's career continues to rise. He is without doubt Scotland's number one referee. Don Robertson, who was up to tricks at Ibrox the day before, is his closest competitor to that, and it sums up so much it's involved in Scottish football. So it's standard fare, but it's good that we've got blogs and websites to highlight it and a podcast to highlight it rather than just letting it escape unnoticed. Celtic are quite happy to play along with levelling up. I think supporters are getting sickened by it, but it's expected, it's wrong, and we could be discussing something else from something similar from the Falkirk game on Friday night, or the Livingston game next week, or the following domestic fixture at Ibrox. So, next time, give James first bite at the good questions, and then I'll have a follow-up rather than me putting up all the good comments. Over to you, James.
Again, it's nothing that we didn't expect. It's nothing that we've not seen before and before and before and before. Beaton is always going to try and cheat us in any way that he can. And that's exactly what it is that we watched. That handball was so obvious and blatant that even Andrew Dallas would not have dared not call him over to monitor. So I don't know what he thought he was doing. As you said, and as I wrote in the piece today, the bigger issue, of course, is if they score for the corner kick, because we've no recourse there whatsoever. And we can stamp our feet and complain as much as we like, and none would have happened. It would have made no difference. Colin probably wouldn't even have covered it on his wee fucking TV show. Wee explanations of why it was technically within the rules or whatever the hell excuse he was going to make. The club apparently likes it like this. It must like it like this, or it would do something about it. You know what I mean? That's the problem. We're going to wait until there's an absolute calamity inflicted on us by one of these decisions, and then we'll complain, and then we'll do the usual one. We've asked questions before, and we've made our dealings known behind the scenes and all that. What everybody needs here is for clubs to stop taking this nonsense lying down and just come out and make a public declaration that it's not good enough and that we're not going to settle for it anymore. But we've been saying that for years. All 3 years have been writing that for years. All 3 years knew there would be a number of contentious decisions in the game when Beaton was announced as a ref, and we all wrote about it in the run-up to the game. We all predicted how Aberdeen would treat us, that we would get roughhoused off the park. And the fact that we picked up Mayor Brookings than they did yesterday just sums up how ludicrous the whole thing is. But that handball incident was a shocker. It was a genuine shocker. Because if that ends in a goal, there's no way it can stand. And Beaton then at least has to explain it. But if the corner kick leads to goal, then the SFA gets off the hook. It's shocking. It's just absolutely shocking.
It is. It is. but obviously, as we kind of alluded to at the start of the pod this evening, that wasn't the only incident this weekend, as we know, or they weren't the only incidents this weekend, as we know. The previous evening at Ibrox, there was some even worse decisions made. Number one being the 7 minutes that were added on, which God knows where they came from. And number two, obviously, the penalty call. And when Desser scored that goal, I genuinely, even though, look, the replays showed conclusively that it was offside, but I genuinely thought that they would try and find a way to allow that to stand. You know, considering what they had done up to that point to Aiden about the Ibrox side, it was off the scale. And that obviously is Don Robertson. And we all know Don Robertson has previous for that kind of behaviour as well. And the reality is there's no way that was a penalty. There is no way that was a penalty. It was a coming together at most, and the Ibrox player made the most of it. And you could see quite clearly by the body language of the Dundee player, he knew he hadn't done anything. He was pretty certain he hadn't done anything out of the way. And the fact that they were given a penalty and they got a point, which they didn't deserve, it was farcical. I mean, you wrote about it today, James, and you went into good detail on it, but it's, again, it's blatantly obvious this early on in the season. We're only two games in, and the referees are already centre stage. You know? So what's your take on that, James? I mean, it is farcical, isn't it?
Yeah, it's farcical. It's farcical that we're still living it. It's farcical that any club still allows it. I was hoping Stephen Presley would make a big deal about it, and he didn't. Instead, he was very... how should we say it? Very restrained. He focused on congratulating his players and talking about how well they did. But he also pointed out, of course, that if you're a possible relegation candidate at the end of the season, you need 3 points for a game like that. A game where you're leading for a good chunk of the match and you're going into the final minutes. So you need the 3 points. You can't afford to drop 2 points if you think you're going to be battling at the end of the season to stay in the league. And they should have been stamping their feet over that because they were denied a win. That's the long and short of it. The only way that mob were going to score was a penalty kick. The only way they were going to legitimately put the ball in the net was a penalty. And as soon as the 7 minutes got declared, that's what everybody was waiting for. I think every single one who's sitting in front of it were waiting on the penalty. It wasn't even a surprise when it came. It was a shocking decision, but it was not a surprise. Everyone is expecting. Everyone of us was just watching the clock saying, right, well, here we go now then. Here we go now. First opportunity to get the guy pointing the spot. They did that. Hey, the officials did their bit. They did their bit. There's no way they could have allowed the goal at the end, but they did their bit. And Dundee should be raging about it, and they're not. And again, this is part of the problem. We allow it. We allow this. Although part of the problem, of course, for clubs is that the SFA's built its wee protection bubble around referees, and you kind of criticise them without the club getting sanctioned, without the manager getting sanctioned and everything else. But a scandalous, that could be a costly, costly result for Dundee at the end of the season. And they had that game won. It's abysmal. Absolutely abysmal.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. Do you feel there's anything needs to be added to that, Joe? I mean, what was your view on things that happened at Ibrox on Saturday evening?
It was great eventually, but we did have 20, 30 seconds of panic and despair in between Dessers putting the ball in the net and realising there seems something fishy about it, but players can be moving forwards, moving backwards, and it can be borderline, but there is absolutely no excuse for Ross McLeod, who was the assistant referee. He was in the Douglas Ross position in front of the main stand at Ibrox. He was looking along the 18-yard line. Dessers was the best part of a yard offside, and if the assistant referee puts his flag up, once the ball's went in the net, then we know there's going to be a VAR check, but I think there's going to be a strong suspicion there and then that it was offside. But Ross McLeod got carried away in the moment. Ross McLeod, probably with a good few friends behind him in the enclosure or in the main stand, and he just couldn't bring himself to put the flag up. So it was Matthew McDermott, who was involved in a lot of nonsense last season. He was on VAR. He watched it again, and there was nothing he could do about it. Just like the Dundee goal was marginal, but it wasn't offside. I don't think they got lines to show it. When James is pointing about clubs, Celtic are the club that's most affected, the club that's most handicapped, and they are very, very happy to go along with us. Who knows how many points it's worth at the end of the season, but it's a significant factor in levelling up, making Scottish football more competitive. Dundee suffered this weekend. Other clubs will suffer. And if Celtic are not going to complain about it, why the hell should Dundee bother about it? Most clubs will be on the end of some wrong decisions. They know when you go to Ibrox, if you're leading the Ibrox, you'll do well to get, I was going to say get away at 5 o'clock, but since that game kicked off at 5:45, but you if you're leading at Ibrox, it'll be at least 7 minutes of stoppage time. There's ways for these officials to conjure it up. And of course, there's no tracking of this. There's nothing to cover it. So it's as expected, and it'll continue and continue and continue. All the stakeholders, I hate that phrase, but all the stakeholders in Scottish football are quite happy with it. It makes it more competitive. Hopefully it's as competitive as last season's title race, although Hearts might have something to say.
Yeah, the Hearts have started well, and their late winner yesterday again, you know, has kept them well in contention with us anyway. And Tony Bloom is definitely, he's making the right sound bites, whether it's all bluster remains to be seen, but we'll touch on that a bit later. But going back to our own board and their complete, what would you say, ineffectual attitude towards refereeing, I mean, that's just another facet of the whole malaise that's set down on the club at the moment, in terms of the way the board is treating the manager, in terms of the way that they will not back the manager when it comes to transfers, the gambling that's going on with regards to the Champions League qualifier. We have, as you guys said, it's 9 days now to the game, and we have 2 days left to announce our squad. There isn't a hope that we're going to get reinforcements in before that game, so we have to resign ourselves to the fact that the team that we will be putting out will be something similar to what we saw yesterday at Pittodrie. And it's just, James used a word today, and I'm kind of inclined to use it myself in my writing as well. A lot of what's going on at the moment, I feel, is amounting to sabotage, and I feel that some people are hell-bent on sabotaging the season ahead. And at the moment, an awful lot of it is coming back to one man. And we would say in the past, when we've had issues with the board, we don't discuss Dermot Desmond very often. We would always point the finger at Peter Lawwell or Michael Nicholson. But Dermot Desmond's name is becoming a hell of a lot more prevalent at the moment, and it's becoming discussed a lot more than it was in the past. And it seems to me, and to you guys as well, from what I can see in your articles, Dermot Desmond is he's overstepping his mark somewhat. Yes, he might be the major shareholder at the club, but he does not own the club. And the issue at the moment is that he is acting like he owns Celtic, and that Celtic is his plaything to do with what he wishes. And without putting too fine a point on it, fuck the paying customer. If I want to give him the two fingers, I'll give him the two fingers. And if they decide that they're going to protest against the club, I'll still give them the two fingers. Just like I did in 2020, when we all knew that Neil Lennon was past his sell-by date, and Dermot Desmond kept him in place for another 3 months and absolutely killed any chance we had whatsoever that season by doing so. So I'll start with you, James. What is Dermot Desmond's end game here? What is he trying to achieve at Celtic at the moment by behaving in the way that he's behaving?
Well, I don't want to single Desmond out, and I don't want to single Law out, and I don't want to single Nicholson out. There is a guy who we've all forgot about, Chris Mackay, and it's about time he got some scrutiny. It's about time some eyeballs were put on him and his whole part of this getting questioned. As far as I'm concerned, they're all part of the same bullshit. Right, it doesn't matter who sits at the head of the table. Everybody around that table was part of this. Everybody around that table, whether they agree or whether they don't, there is a campaign of sabotage against Rodgers going on. It's absolutely obvious. And every single one of them is responsible for that. Every one of them. And I'm not going to single any one of them out any longer. I'm going to blame them collectively for what happens here. Because every one of them is responsible for it in some way. If Desmond is the guy throwing his weight around, it's only because the rest of them allow it. If it's Law, it's only because the rest of them allow that. They're all in this together. They've all got to take responsibility, and they'll all walk point if this goes wrong, every one of them. I said in the piece today that for this narrative to succeed, Rodgers has to fail. And they know that, because the only way that this works, it's the only way that they can sell us on the idea that we're better off without the guy, and it's the only way they can sell us on the idea that they've got a much better system that they've got to put into practice next season. And Rodgers has to fail for that to happen. Because if Rodgers doesn't fail, of course, then the triumph is his. Because everybody can see that he's having his hands tied behind his back. The problem with that, of course, is that Rodgers is just a bit too good. It's not out with the realms of possibility that no matter what they do to this guy, that he will find a way anyway. Don't forget that in 2018, transfer window 2018, summer window, they sold Moussa Dembele at the last knockings. And at the end of a window that had already been an absolute disaster area, they sold his best player at the end of it, right on the final hours of the final night. And it's not out with the realms of possibility that we find a way to sell Dazen Maeda and don't replace him before this ends. And I would still bet that Rodgers will find a way. And that's a problem for them, because they're never going to be able to sell us on the idea that Rodgers is some kind of backstabber, or Rodgers is some kind of malignant influence on the club. If Rodgers pulls this off and wins anyway. And the miscalculation they made isn't just about Rodgers. The miscalculation they made is about the club across the street, because they're perfectly capable of falling over their own feet all the way to the finish line. And if Rodgers succeeds against all the odds, against everything that they've done to him, against everything that they might still do to him, then it's his victory, and there's no way they can spin it. But if they sabotage Rodgers blatantly and Rodgers doesn't succeed, how do they think that ends well? You asked what the end game is. I couldn't tell you. I don't think they know. That's why I wrote that article about Stockton Rush this morning and about the Titan, right? This is the mentality here. We're dealing with people who don't think that they are playing on the same field as the rest of us. They think they are superior to all of us, and their knowledge and their insight and their genius, right? These people are megalomaniacs, and they don't see how any of this can go wrong. They've not thought it through properly. Don't forget, Stockton Rush got told that that ship was going to implode. He got told that. The people were built the thing, told them it wasn't safe. It failed testing. So he knew it was screwed. But he thought that his ego could hold it together. Don't assume these people know what they're doing. Don't assume they have a plan. Don't assume that they're behaving rationally. It doesn't always... It's not. People don't always behave rationally. Leaders don't always behave rationally. People in authority don't always behave rationally. We saw Kyogo with a Champions League game still to go. And all I heard all the way through January was, well, we must have a plan. But we didn't have a plan. We still have to replace Kyogo. Don't tell me that these people have a plan. They haven't fought this for longer than 5 minutes. Whatever wee petty grudges that are on their minds or whatever it is that's going on inside Celtic Park right now, do not blind yourself to the idea as part of some grand strategy. It isn't. These people don't know what they're doing. They don't know. But they think they're smarter enough to figure it out, and I don't think they are. We're in a lot of trouble here. We could be in a lot of trouble. If the club across the city had its act together even a bit, I would be worried about this season, really genuinely concerned about it. I'm already very concerned about what next season's got in store for us, and God knows how long after that, because these people are determined to put us through their little experiment. And we are going there whether we like it or not. That's why I'm resigned to it. This window will end the way it's went so far as an absolute farce. And there's a section of your support that will be perfectly happy with it as long as we can stay one step ahead of a team that keeps falling out of the same feet. That's fair enough. Europe, we are going to get absolutely done. We are going to get battered and humiliated, and it's going to be painful to watch, and it's going to strip your reputation to the bone, and it's going to make it harder to qualify in years to come. But still, the board will have its way here. It will get what it wants, and it will get to conduct its wee science experiment next season and beyond. And I don't see how it ends well. I don't see how it ends well. For people like us who can see this absolutely clearly and see what is going on, we'll still be here. We'll still be shouting the ball, and we'll still be making our case, right? But once they get through the season, they'll cop a lot of anger for the way it ends. If it ends with Rodgers walking out as a winner or whatever, they will cop the flak for not supporting them. But people will still buy season tickets, and we will have to watch their version of this play out next season and after that. And I'm just resigned to it. We'll see where it goes. We'll see where it goes. Nowhere good, that's what I think. But we'll see. I'm a bit like Rodgers is right now. I'm fed up talking about it. I really am. I just want this transfer window shut, and then we'll deal with whatever we've got to deal with. But
yeah,
people who think that there is a plan here, and people who are still expecting major business to be done before this window because the board know what they're doing, please wake up. These people don't have a clue. But they're just egotistical enough to think that this will all work out, and I wouldn't bet on that.
Yep. Joe, you're always the optimistic guy on the show. glass half full, glass half full. But look, I suppose James alluded earlier on to the 2018 transfer window and what we did in the 2018 transfer window on that. You know, the possible sale of Maeda at the end of this window should come as no shock to anybody because of the way that we did, you know, of what we did in the 2018 window and let Moussa Dembélé go at the last knockings, which was crazy. I mean, it was crazy, and it still handicapped us. But at the same time, Brendan Rodgers did exactly what he's doing at the moment. He still brought the team on. He still had them, even when he did leave to go to Leicester in 2019. He still had the team in a dominant position, and he still had them in a position for Neil Lennon to take them on to do the treble. So the reality is, yes, Brendan Rodgers is the glue holding this whole mess together. They seem hell-bent on getting rid of that glue and running down the road where they want to do their own experiment. And so I'll ask you, Joe, in your mind, what is their, we won't say end game, but what's their plan?
The plan is to make sure any credit for Celtic's current successes should not go to Brendan Rodgers. It's not on. The evidence could not be more evident between the appointment of the current chairman as chief executive in October 2003 and 2016, we never got near a treble. There wasn't even the heartache of winning the league and the League Cup and then losing controversially a Scottish Cup tie. We never get near a treble. Folks should have a look back at the 2015-2016 season. We lost at Hampden to Ross County and to a four-year-old tribute act managed by Mark Warburton. Barry Mackay scored a wonder goal. I know there's somebody at the Daily Record now at NewsQuest that thinks Barry Mackay is a greater talent than Kieran Tierney. But 2015-2016 was horrendous. Large parts of Celtic Park were closed down. Week by week, folk with season tickets weren't going to matches. The Europa League was horrific. We lost home and away to Mouldy, etc., etc., etc. And then abracadabra, I'll tell you when. It was the 20th of May, 2016, a Friday afternoon. Brendan Rodgers was appointed. He spooked them that much. Andy Halliday and Tav had a nightmare against Hibs the next day. Hibs won the Scottish Cup for the first time in over 100 years. And the appointment of Brendan Rodgers completely transformed Celtic. There's kids at primary school just now, or kids starting secondary, that think Celtic should win the treble every second season, at worst. There's kids at school that have known more Celtic trebles than guys that watched the great Jock Stein teams, watched the Martin O'Neill teams, and there was three trebles between 1960 and 2016, three trebles. Brendan Rodgers put things in place for four trebles, four back-to-back trebles, and Ange Postecoglou picked up. You get two trophies his first season, three in his third. By these people, and I think we can nail down one person in particular, the fact that he doesn't get 100% glory and credit for this, he does have his cheerleaders, he does have his favourites. They'll tell you how brilliant he is and how fortunate we are. If it wasn't for the current Celtic chairman, we'd have been in liquidation. We were in the roads to ruins, and his brave decision-making avoided all that. Absolute nonsense. So that's a little part of it. Clearly, that guy wants the credit. Every now and then, you'll get somebody saying that the Celtic have won 34, Celtic have won 36 trophies since he became chief executive in 2003. But as you pointed out the other week, Eric, Bob Kelly did not win the European Cup. Jock Stein won the European Cup. On the subject of Dermot Desmond, I don't think he's remotely interested. No interest whatsoever. I don't think he's calling the shots. I don't think he's halting things. I don't think there's bids for players sitting in his entry, and he just wakes up on the 30th of August and tries to do things. That story was put about by the current chairman's favourite podcaster. He was on board. He did a shared podcast. There was two podcasts got together, and the idea was put out that Dermot Desmond is involved in everything. Dermot Desmond's causing a halt to everything. If you get a signing for under $3 million, fair enough. Anything more than $3 million, you need to wait a month for Dermot Desmond to approve it. Absolute nonsense. Dermot Desmond has barely shown any interest in Celtic. As long as Celtic are solvent, Dermot Desmond's fine. His biggest concern is the fairways and the pin positions at his favourite golf course tomorrow. He's not interested. As long as Celtic are solvent, if the noise levels get too high, such as during the 2021 lockdown season, he'll get involved reluctantly. He'll bang some heads together and finally make some decisions. But there is one guy behind it all. Nicholson's involved in it. Mackay's involved in it. But they were both appointed. They get their Celtic jobs under the current chairman when he was chief executive. That's where everything's coming from. He's got four or five prominent messengers. And when they drop some story out there, various others will get on board with it, pretend that they're also in the know, and they'll repeat that same story. So I think we're wise enough to look out for these things, spot the source of these ideas, but other people just take it at surface level and take it for read that, it's all Dermot Desmond's fault just now. It's not Dermot Desmond's fault. There's other guys at hands-on. They've appointed everyone inside Celtic Park. I've seen a few comments about ACTOM. I was listening last week. It seems to be some folk that think there's got to be some organised action that's taken universally by all supporters. No chance. That's not happening. If you want to buy Adidas kit every day of the week, Celtic will let you. But it's not compulsory. I think I mentioned it last week, the week before. Each individual supporter can do their own thing. You do not need to buy every piece of kit that comes out. You don't need to buy a Paradise Windfall ticket to help the Celtic youth team. The Celtic youth team needs a lot of help, a lot more help than a £2 Windfall ticket. You don't need to buy pies. You don't need to buy... That's a John Brown line there. Each individual supporter can do what they like. You don't need to buy a cup. You don't need to buy a Fall Cup ticket. You don't need to buy a Champions League qualifier ticket. If you want to stay in the cup final ticket scheme, the chances are you'll not get a ticket for a cup final at Hampden. Most, a good chunk of them will go to £300 hospitality packages. So I'll defend ACTOM there. It's not their place to decide policy for all Celtic fans. Each guy can decide individually. If they think things are great, rush over and buy some more Adidas kit. I'm sure there'll be some great stuff coming out this week. If you're a wee bit hacked off, don't buy it. And there's other things that you can refuse to buy, buy. But I think we know the source of most of the issues at the club. Our best ever two transfer windows were summer 21 and January 22. And guess what? There was no one of his surname anywhere near the club. He was lurking in the background. But I think we're mostly aligned in that. There's a few differences. Others might think that Dermot Desmond's involved. I don't think he's involved at all. So there's my soapbox view on that one.
Can I pick up on some of the points that I've been reading in, along the bottom? First, anybody who thinks that Joe McHugh is a plant to disrupt Celtic is a fucking moron of the first rate. A moron of the first rate. Dave C. And let me say something else to you. You're saying that it doesn't make sense. The board is trying to sabotage Rodgers. That doesn't make sense. So let me go back again to what I was saying. If you watch the opening to the Netflix documentary, What Happened to the Titan, Stockton Rush himself was in that submersible at the bottom of the freaking ocean. And he could hear the threads snapping. So it wasn't even that the scientists told him it would break, that his experts told him it would break. He sat there at the bottom and listened to the sound of it breaking and still went back down there on another trip with tourists. That doesn't make sense. The world doesn't make sense. People do things every day that don't make sense. Stop looking for sense. Stop looking for a pattern that makes sense. Sometimes it just doesn't make sense. The piece I wrote the day, which we were talking about earlier, the other one I wrote the day about this, I was talking about the two Arab American organizations, the political organizations that always endorse a Democrat, always endorse a Democrat. They refuse to endorse Biden because of Gaza. Fair enough, right? Fair enough. So Harris gets the nomination after Biden steps down. They have a meeting where they tell her, we're not going to endorse you either. We're going to sit and we're going to wait. So at that point, the senior Democratic strategists say to them, how do you think this ends? How do you think this goes? If she wins, she doesn't need you. You'll never be at the table again. You'll be blanked out completely. None of your issues will ever get talked about. None of you will ever be welcome in the White House. If he wins, you're fucked. Absolutely screwed. And the people you represent are absolutely screwed. They nominated Trump. They endorsed Donald Trump. And that went just about as well as you might think. The world does not have to make sense. People in senior organizations, allegedly smart people, do stupid things all the time. All the time. Some of them are driven by ego. Some of them are driven by money. Some of them are driven by, you know, you don't know why people have got the irrational things. They, I think the board of directors is deliberately trying to sabotage Brendan Rodgers. Of course I do. Of course I do. There's enough evidence out there. They've been doing it for many, many, many months. And you have to be blind not to see it when you look at it properly. Don't make the mental block that it doesn't make sense. It makes perfect sense when you think about who these people are and what drives them. It makes perfect sense. There are people who never wanted them there in the first place. There are people who won't mourn if he leaves Zamora. And there were people on social media the other week who were saying to me, if Rodgers is so pissed off, Rodgers should just walk. But that plays into their hands. That's exactly what they want. Yes, madness. The whole world is run on madness, in case you haven't noticed. The fucking fat orange guy sitting in the White House. Brexit. The Russian invasion of Ukraine. What's happening in Gaza. The world's a bit mad. Maybe you've missed it. Doesn't have to make sense.
Yep. And I can't argue with your points there, James. It doesn't make sense. The world doesn't have to make sense. But for all three of us, what Celtic or what's happening at Celtic at the moment and what the Celtic board is doing makes perfect sense, because the patterns have been there for so long and you're blind if you don't see them. And we have seen these patterns time out of number. And when this summer window started, we all said this to us is a deja vu of 2018 because of what happened in 2018. And look, 2018 wouldn't be in such sharp contrast as it is now if we weren't seeing what we feel is a repeat of 2018. And this to me is a repeat and could end up being worse than 2018. Only time will tell. The next 3 weeks will tell us whether it will end up being worse than 2018. But
the only reason he's still here, mate, is he made a promise to us that he wouldn't quit.
Exactly.
If he hadn't made that promise to the fans, he would have walked already.
Yeah, and the point I want to make on that is I wrote an article recently enough there where I said, you know, Brendan alluded to the Trinity, or not the, the Holy Trinity in his first season. I talked about that a little bit last week, and I'll just talk about it again this week. He said the Holy Trinity of the fans, the management team, and the players was unbreakable in his first season in 2016-17. And while there is an element of our fan base at the moment that doesn't necessarily agree with Brendan Rodgers and still kind of holds a grudge over what happened in 2019 and the way he walked out in 2019, I think a lot of us who are at this point in time are sensible to know the reasons behind it and why he was driven to doing it. So I can set that aside. I was angry at the time, James. You'll always admit that you were angry.
Yeah,
but you regret that. Yeah, you regret that anger.
That's right? The only thing about my great.
Yeah, and I regret that anger as well, because I understand it better now than I understood it then. But what I would say is this season, if Brendan, to spite the board, to spite them, goes out and has an amazing season, and he achieves that with the tools that he has been given, it will be... I firmly believe that if he walks out the door at the end of this season with his head held high, delivering the maximum of what he can deliver, and the fan base wakes up and realizes how good they had it under him when he walks out that door and he's replaced by somebody like, as we said, Sean Maloney or some sort of project manager that they have in mind to do their bidding and to be a yes man. I just get the feeling that that might be the straw that breaks the camel's back with the fan base, that a lot of people will wake up. I don't know about you guys, but I feel that a lot of people are already starting to wake up. A lot of people are starting to see this farce for what it is. And a lot of people are starting to question it. And those who are trying to turn a blind eye to it are doing it now out of desperation, you know, because they don't want to face the reality of what's going on. They just don't want to face that reality. Because to face that reality would be to admit... where they keep saying that these guys know what they're doing, it would be to admit that they now realize that these guys don't actually have a fucking clue of what they're doing. And they'll keep fighting and arguing this to save face. But we're all going to know in 3 weeks exactly where we stand in all of this. And it's like you've said, no, I'm at the same point as you, James. I just want this bloody transfer window to close so we can get ahead with the season and we can see what actually, how this all plays out. But one thing that I'm 100% sure of, I would be shocked if Brendan Rodgers is the manager in the dugout at the start of next season. And I would not be shocked if it's somebody so mediocre that it drives the fan base to distraction.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I asked the question there about whether Rodgers was right to walk away the first time. Rodgers was absolutely right to walk away the first time. The problem was that Rodgers' timing absolutely sucked. It was awful. And Rodgers should have thought it through a bit more. I think Rodgers had been pushed to the point where he didn't want to spend another day inside Celtic Park. To be honest, I think that's what happened. I know this from personal experience, that the relationship between him and Law had completely imploded. There was nothing left of it. I don't even think it would have been civil by that time. And that was only in August that year after the John McGinn fiasco. And then he got insulted again in the January window when they signed players without his consent and no even the guys that he wanted. Rodgers just couldn't stomach any more of it. But Rodgers, in his rush to get out, missed an obvious problem. And that was that the board and its acolytes could spin it to blame him for it and make out that he'd stabbed the club in the back. The timing was awful. If he'd have gone at the end of that season, nobody would have complained. Nobody would have had anything to say about it because we all knew what was going on. 90% of us knew what was going on. Right? I mean, as Celtic fans, we watched that summer transfer window and the absolute disgrace that it was. And it was an insult to Rodgers. The whole thing was an insult to Rodgers. John McGinn was the guy he wanted, and he got Yosef Malumba weeks later on a free transfer. Guy had been out of contract since the window opened. Right? And that's who he got as his midfield player. I mean, that was an insult to Rodgers, and we all know it was an insult to him. You know, people who don't think that they would sabotage Rodgers this time, well, they did it the last time. That's blatantly what happened. And we could all see what happened. And Rodgers somehow still had enough about him to take us to another League Cup and having his fighting in the league, and then we had a good shout at winning it. But the timing was terrible. Had he had enough staying power and enough resolve to see it through to the end of the season, we'd all had a very different take on that. Oyers would have had a different take on it. And I regret writing what I wrote about Rodgers when he left, because I was so angry at Rodgers and the manner of his departure that I ignored the people who were responsible for it. And I should not have done that. And I wish I hadn't done it, because they deserve to get the flag for it, no him.
Yeah. Joe, I mean, you haven't had an opportunity to say your piece on this, but do you feel he was right at that time? Because we're a lot of the people on our comments there are saying that, you know, that James is going too far by saying that that he understands why he did it and so on and so forth, but I think, like, when we look at the patterns that we're seeing now, we definitely understand why he did it. We definitely understand why he walked out. And I don't think money had anything to do with it. I think his work atmosphere just became toxic because of what he was dealing with. And we also have to bear in mind at that time he had the de facto director of football in Peter Lawwell. So, I mean, how do you feel, Joe? Do you think he was right at that time?
Can I step in and say something about that? That meeting that myself and Altied were at the day that John McGinn signed for Villa, the day after the AK Athens game at Celtic Park. One of the things that he said to us that day was that Rodgers was complaining, although we're doing things the way we've always done them. And both Altied and I looked at each other, and I think we were both thinking at the same moment, that's the problem, mate. That is the problem. This isn't a guy to be treated like that. This guy's the only manager in Scottish football history who's won back-to-back trebles. He's fighting like crazy to take us to the next level and get us through into the Champions League groups again. And this is still being run like a corner shop. That's right there, that's the problem. And I said to him that day, if this goes wrong, your one consolation is that you will never hear the words, who's the hips player? Stephen Fletcher. You'll never hear the word Stephen Fletcher again. And I should have stuck to that, and I should have hammered Law for all of that at the time. And I didn't, and I'm pissed off about it to this day.
Joe?
It was all about the timing. Yeah. I'm sure he got a second chance, and I think that it's the timing of it that brought him back, probably against his better judgment. The timing was horrendous. I think The Leicester managers got the sack on the Saturday. He had a bad result on Saturday night. He got the sack on Saturday morning. We were playing Motherwell that day because we just lost to Valencia in the Europa League. And there seemed a fair bit of speculation about it. I mean, BBC, I think it was Alistair Lamont, was very insistent on questioning him on the Leicester job. I've not been near a BBC license in a long time, but the Monday was strange. I think Scott Bain did a media conference to preview the Hearts game on the Wednesday, and Scott Bain sort of dismissed speculation that Rodgers would be leaving for Leicester, and overnight he was on his way down to Leicester with three Celtic colleagues. And John Kennedy and Stevie Wood stayed behind. So it was all in the timing. We played on the Sunday. He left on the Monday night. I think it was announced on the Tuesday. We played Hearts away on the Wednesday and made Hibs away in the Scottish Cup on the Saturday. If Rodgers had held on for one more week, if we'd beaten Hearts as we did, late goal from Odson Edouard, and beat Hibs to progress in the Scottish Cup, if he'd left the following week, it would have been a lot more easier to understand. But there was way too much anger. There was some ridiculous anger. But I'm pretty certain that the timing is the main reason that he's back again. Because in most circumstances, Brendan Rodgers is not perfect, right? Brendan Rodgers is far from perfect. But he's a pretty good manager. He's a far better manager than our current chief executive is at being a chief executive. No, Leicester will not be going anywhere near Michael Nicholson should they ever require a chief executive. And they'll certainly not be going near Peter Lowe for the chief executive, just as Arsenal weren't remotely interested in Peter Lowe, and neither were Liverpool, because these clubs know that the substance underneath Peter Lowe, he's quite good up here, but that's the extent of it. And I just said quite good. He's not fantastic. He's made taken advantage of circumstances and his salary. The money that he's made out of Celtic for what he's put into the club is absolutely outrageous. But Rodgers made a mistake first time around, and the timing that he left, an element of anger is understandable. There was way too much. But we're back to 2015. We're back to 2025. But it feels like 2018. The car crash is underway. We don't quite know when it's going to impact. We know what the fallout is. I don't think Neil Lennon will be back again, but it'll be someone of a similar calibre. It'll be someone on a similar salary. It'll be someone of similar demands. Someone that's very grateful to have the Celtic job, and somebody that's confident that can keep things going domestically. But Rodgers, I don't think he's going to leave, but in football circles, I suspect the agents of all the major players at Celtic will know what's about to unfold. Celtic, when Brendan Rodgers says, people are working very hard behind the scenes, see that hard work? That hard work might be in trying to get players sold. That could be getting Carter Vickers, Alistair Johnson, Maeda and Hitachi sold. And if they don't go this window, win, lose or draw in the Champions League, I'd expect someone to leave, at least one big name to leave before the window closes. And the others, they're not daft. They'll see the writing in the wall. They'll be able to read the tea leaves. They'll know what direction the wind's blowing. And at September 2026, I think there might not be much left of the squad that Ange built over two transfer windows. So there's another gloomy take from me. I think that's down to half empty.
Well, look, this is one of our subjects or one of our points in the podcast tonight. We've kind of gone on a bit, so I'll conclude it with this. I wrote an article last week where I said, if Peter Lowell had not destroyed, you know, the opportunities or not the opportunities we would have had under Brendan Rodgers back in 2019, I have no doubt we would have won the 10 in a row had Brendan Rodgers remained. And I always said, when I looked back in hindsight on that banner that the fans put up in Tynecastle after, you know, in that first game after Rodgers had left, where it said, you traded immortality for mediocrity. I now believe that that banner is totally and should be totally dedicated to Peter Lawwell. Because by treating Brendan Rodgers the way he did back in 2018/19, he traded immortality for mediocrity, because he destroyed any chance we had of the 10 in a row by doing what he did back then. And I just feel that we're seeing very much the same again this time around. But I believe that whatever way it ends, Brendan Rodgers will be the man who walks out with his head held high, and his legacy will be far, far better. And we'll be a far, far better club for the, you know, in terms of what we'll have won trophies wise. I think this season he's going to leave a fantastic legacy when he, if he does leave. So we'll move on. We have a couple of small points left to make or to talk about. And one of the ones that I wanted to talk about was the boasts that Tony Bloom made last week. So I'll start with Joe on this one. Joe, do you think Tony Bloom is a creditable threat? Do you think that we should be taking him seriously? And do you think that, based on the start that Hearts have had, is it going to be one of your usual, similar to what Aberdeen did last season, they'll start well and they'll just fall away, same as always, and it'll just be back to the same old, or do they have a real smart guy with his star lizard system and all the rest of it? Is he actually going to invest properly in the club, and is he going to drive them forward? Because he believes he's here to take the Scottish Premiership by storm. He believes he's here to dislodge us and the Ibrox side. So what's your take on him? Is he just all bluster and bravado, or is he a guy to be taken seriously? And when you consider what he did at Brighton and Hove Albion, you have to feel to some degree he has to be taken seriously.
Brighton and USG. USG is a decent example. All you need to do is be competent to be fairly successful in Scotland. Over the last few years, Hearts and Aberdeen have been trading third place, followed by an incredible fall into the bottom half. Finishing third place has almost guaranteed European group stage football. The squads are short and the managers get sacked before 6, 7, 8 months into the new season. So Hearts won't have European football. Derek McInnes is a competent manager. I saw one of his favourite reporters in the Daily Record getting a bit misty-eyed this morning, suggesting that Russell Martin could have been replaced by Derek McInnes and things might have been a bit more happy and glorious rather than having a vegan hipster that wears sandals and has muesli for breakfast sitting in the manager's office at Ibrox. So Hearts will be credible. I think they might have learned from Aberdeen last season and be able to sustain it a bit longer. And one of the phrases I really love is, can they split the old firm? What that really means, what they won't say is, can they finish above the 2012 Tribute Act at Ibrox and the closest challengers to Celtic? And I don't think anyone is going to come out and say Celtic will finish in third place, but it's a bit uncomfortable for them to say Hearts can finish above the beloved Tribute Act. So they just couch it with this phrase, can Hearts split the old firm? I think Hearts will have a credible season. It'd be interesting, I don't know if anyone's ever done it, but if you could stitch together Aberdeen's start to the season and Hibs for the last two-thirds of the season, then that would be a credible challenge. That could have been fairly close to Celtic. We don't know how Celtic will perform this coming season. I suspect we're not going to have the same flying start as we did last season when... We went to Ibrox 14 points clear on the 2nd of January. I think there's only two draws before then. So Celtic will come down a little bit, I would expect. Hearts will be up a lot. And they could repeat what Aberdeen did last season and maintain it a bit longer. I suspect that Tony Bloom knows what he's doing. You don't need to be fantastic to be pretty successful in Scotland. If you finish third, you like to finish bottom six the following season. So I would expect Hearts to sustain that. If they can finish second this cup this season, if they can have two successive seasons playing in European group stage football, but that is far from guaranteed. Our coefficient going down the pan. Cyprus is catching up with Scotland rapidly. So there's quite a few variables there. But I think Hearts will be an they'll be better than Aberdeen last season. They'll be better than previous Hearts side, and there'll be other things that come into play to see how close they do get to how close they get to Celtic, not how close they get to splitting the Old Firm, whatever the hell that is. Over to you, James, for some non-political comments on Tony Bloom.
It's weird there because I was just going to launch into a big political comment about Tony Bloom. I don't know how to feel about Tony Bloom. I'm going to be honest with you. Anything that makes our domestic competition a little bit better and a little bit sharper is obviously perhaps going to be good for us. Or at least you would hope that it would be good for us because it would push our board to take itself a bit more seriously and take the challenge. But the truth is, if Tony Bloom succeeds this season, if Tony Bloom gets Hearts into some kind of credible position where they get maybe 80 points in the league or whatever it is, it doesn't really matter whether they split ourselves and our rivals. And anything is possible there, by the way, because the mess over there is expanding rapidly. Any success that Hearts have is just going to further convince our glorious custodians that this data-driven model is the right way to go and that we can basically hire our own Derek McInnes and get results. So that's why I don't know how to feel about it. On the one hand, I want to see it go well and I want to see Hearts mount a bigger challenge and take some points after the mob across the city and make their lives even more miserable and uncomfortable than it is. I want us to have to push to be better. But if Tony Bloom succeeds and it goes too well, then nothing will dissuade our board from trying the full fat version of it the following year. So I'm a bit torn on that subject, gotta be honest. The more I think about it, the more worried I am that Tony Bloom might actually do something decent.
Okay. Well, we're coming close to the end now, guys. We've gone slightly a bit over time. We had over 160 on the pod on the live stream tonight, which is great. Again, it's steady, it's consistent. And as usual, guys and girls, if you enjoy what we're talking about, if you enjoy the subjects we discuss, will you like and subscribe and hit the thumbs up? And as Joe always says, add comments afterwards. We like a good bit of discourse afterwards and in on the YouTube page once we're finished up. So finally, guys, we'll wrap it up with predictions for next weekend. Obviously, we've got the late kickoff on the Friday evening against Livingston. From my perspective, I kind of said already.
Falkirk.
My bad. We've got Falkirk on the evening kickoff on Friday, and I said to you guys at the outset that we kind of need a morale boosting 3 or 4 nil. And a good couple of goal scorers on the getting goals for us, especially Adam Ida and Dyson Maeda. I think they both need to break their ducks and start pushing ahead this season, because Ida has been pretty much non-existent so far in the first two games, and he's making fools out of us after all the defense we've given him. But I said to you, Joe, that a lot of the speculation that's been going on in the press about him and a lot of the negativity that's been flowing from our own board and several sections of our fans, he's obviously feeling that too. And that has to be hitting his confidence as well. And while, we say these guys are not kids and they, they earn big money and they should be able to take it because they earn big money, they're human beings at the end of the day. And they do feel it. And they do feel when a fan base isn't behind them. And as Celtic fans, we've always supported our players, and that's one thing we should be doing for Adam Ida, regardless of his price tag. So for the Falkirk game, I'm going to say 4-0. Ida Maeda. I think Nigran will get a goal again, and I would say I'll give the other one to go mental and say Shin Yamada will come on and get a late one. How about you, Joe?
I think it would be similar to yesterday Aberdeen. I think a fairly routine 2-0, not pulling up any trees and nothing falling apart. And there'll be a little bit of intrigue over the team, whether Rodgers wants to vary it a bit. I suspect he doesn't want to, because he's not got too much trust on the bench. So he might get trusty coming in. and Scales at left back, give Tierney a rest. But it's 50-50 at this stage. It's similar to playing the Livingston game. You don't know whether players need games to get them up to speed or whether they're still getting nursed gently towards full pitch. So I expect a fairly straightforward win without any drama. It'd be nice if it was 4-0, and if Adam Ida could score 5 of those goals, I'd be absolutely delighted. But it's a shame for it's tragic. He's a black Irish Celtic player. It's one of the worst combinations you can possibly get in Scotland. And there's plenty of Celtic supporters that have taken the bait. They've seen a target painted in his back, and they're happy to pile on. So if anyone knows Adam, wish him all the best. He's given us some fantastic moments in the short time at Celtic. The 2024 Scottish Cup final, the 2024 SPFL title, they wouldn't have happened without Adam Ida, but that doesn't suit some people. He's below par just now. It happens with footballers, it happens with strikers. Hopefully he's back on form soon. And if that's Friday night, all the better. So I'll pass to James for some closing thoughts.
Yeah, well, I'll give some closing thoughts on Falkirk, and then I'll divert a wee tiny bit to finish up. I won't keep these guys too long, but I expect some major changes in the team for that one. And I think your Maddo will play up front from the start. I think we'll find out where this boy's got on Friday night. I think it would be good to play Yamada from the start. I think Ida needs to be taken out the firing line for his own good as much as anyone else for a wee while. He needs to find his confidence again. And he seems very good at doing it for the bench. So, fingers crossed for him. I just want to take a wee minor diversion into events at another ground this weekend. And one of your comments mentioned it, which was the booing of Kieran Dowell and the general atmosphere at that Cobber there. We're in a bit of a state right now in terms of the this transfer window and who knows what the hell is going on behind the scenes. But the one thing that gets your board off the hook over and over again is the abject state of that club over there. And all the talk was that the takeover was going to change this and the takeover was going to change that. And then they go and they appoint Russell Martin, who, if ever a guy walked in to the wrong movie, it's this guy. He's not a cultural fit. He's not a mentality fit. His style of play doesn't fit. There's nothing about this guy that says he's going to survive for very long, and I think we should enjoy him while we can. It would be insane for them to sack him this early, but as I said, we live in a world where irrational people are running a lot of organisations and doing irrational things, and I would not be terribly surprised if it didn't last more than a few months. But that's not even their biggest problem. Our big problem is that we are sitting on a pile of money and we won't spend it. Their biggest problem is that they are bleeding money like never before. They've spent a lot of money. They've spent a lot more than we have. And they don't really have a lot of wiggle room in terms of spending that money and being able to spend it, because they were already pushing on the 70% ceiling for financial sustainability regulations. And I don't know how. If they don't make a major player sale, they're going to be able to meet that criteria. It defies belief what is going on over there again. But, you know, I'm perfectly happy to accept what I can see with my own eyes, because I said the world doesn't have to make sense. And none of what's happened over there for a long time has made a lot of sense. And this especially doesn't, because they're just piling the wage bill up and they've spent money on signings and they ain't got rid of a single key player for a profit, and I genuinely don't know how they're going to meet the 70% regulation. I genuinely don't know how they're going to do it. But every single penny they spend over it is money that UEFA will force them to cut next season and the season after that. So all they're doing right now out there is they're saving themselves up even more trouble for somewhere down the line. They're gambling big, 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 big on this Champions League qualification. And so far they've got reasonably lucky with the draws. Brewers or Salzburg are going to give them a much harder game, and if they go out, there's going to be a reckoning over there like never before.
Okay, and just to wrap it up, James, What do you reckon? How do you reckon they're going to get on against St Mirren on Sunday?
No. Eric, you're yourself. They're playing Alloa on Saturday.
Okay. All right. I am obviously looking at...
I stayed away over the weekend
and I completely forgot that these guys.
They took the skipping the game.
Yeah. No. So they're playing Alloa. Well, obviously they're going to win that one. If they don't, there's going to be hell to pay.
They'll get a home draw. That's what I would bet on.
Yeah. But okay, guys. Yeah, Robert's right. I'm miles out. I've been out of touch for the last 4 days, so I've parachuted back in today now and got all my fixtures wrong. So, look, guys, we'll wind it up on that one. It's been a good show again, and great response from all the fans. We'll be back the same time next week. Joe, I believe you're presenting, and we'll have plenty more, I'm sure, to debate and talk about next Monday, as we always do. So we'll all talk then, guys. In the meantime, enjoy your week, and everybody be able to catch us as usual every day with our stories. So we'll all see you next week. Good luck.
Night, guys.